I was reminiscing about my winter stories, because I've been a part of monastic startups for much of my life, and I have many, but the best one, I think, which I wasn't a part of, when they were starting Amaravati, they couldn't, the heating was from a large electrical system, and they couldn't afford the heating because it was very, very inefficient, and it pushed. They had these big, big pipes that pushed liquid through these barrack-type buildings. Amaravatis are extensive, and they couldn't afford the heating. A little bit. So Ajahn Vajiro was in one of these long, long huts, which had very little insulation, which is actually built by the Canadian Army, I think, way back in the Second World War. So it's very much past its use-by date. And you know, everyone's working on this new monastery, trying to get it together and paying off the mortgage, the usual startup problems. And Ajahn Vajiro's room had this large pipe going along the wall, and that was the radiator. And there's some kind of stuff flowing through it. But there is, you know, the boiler's on and off because we can't afford the electrics, or the electric swing, or something like that. So in the middle of the night, his pipe bursts, froze and burst, but then the liquids flow through again. So he gets up at 2 in the morning, gets the spanners and gets under there and tries to close stuff off. He came back about an hour later and his sleeping bag was frozen to the floor. It's much more cozy now. So those make good stories. So anyway, we're doing this tent experiment, so now Jane and Zal have gone off to town again. And we noticed that the kerosene heater, that doesn't work. But actually with the kerosene heater, someone had put diesel fuel in the tank. So that's the smell we were getting. So the next part of the caper is we're going to get some more of those radiant heaters. I'm determined to give this experiment a go. I mean, I'd rather build a meditation hall, but that'll come. So I think this afternoon it'll be okay to be there, because the sun's warming it too, and then we'll see how cold it is this evening. Right, so thank you for your patience, as they say. And where was that question? There was a question. Yes, did you?
Sorry.
No. On the tray.
When reoccurring obsessive thoughts come in the form of movie-like pictures, is it sometimes helpful to consciously look at those pictures, or is it usually better to go toward body awareness? I don't think in pictures myself, and I found when I talk to people, that seems to be personal, how the mind creates things. So I create storylines and attachment to storylines and narratives through thought. So that's the only thing I could reflect upon. But if, and the point of it is, like, if it's obsessive, why is it obsessive? Why does that cycle keep repeating itself? So, you know, I was pondering this question. One, to me, is the determination to be in the present moment. Because one of the things of obsessive thoughts, or just the kind of distractedness of thoughts, a lot of it is around past and future. So if the visual images are projecting one into the future, or recollecting the past in a kind of storyline, I was there, I did this, I did that, then that's one thing I would do. I'd really make a strong determination each time past or present proliferations happen, no, present moment awareness. So that'd be one thing. And then the other would be, is there a kind of fascination with the visual patterns that keeps one connected to it in a way of either aversion, because that's what happens with, I think, obsessive patterns. They come up, we kind of find ourselves in them, and then we try to get rid of them. So how do you find a middle way between not indulging and trying to get rid of them? So oftentimes when we find ourselves in those patterns, we're at a point where we probably want to get rid of them. And when we want to get rid of them, somehow we have to go against what we call vibhava tanha, or the craving to get rid of. And it seems to me the body is a very good way to do that. So I, you know, my intuition was I wouldn't pursue the visual imagery, but I'm not sure. You know, I'm not sure about that. But the if you take the Four Noble Truths teaching, then and you keep working with the three types of craving: the craving to become, the craving to get rid of, and just sensual attachment, hedonism, and so on. Then that's the analysis you apply to the problem of obsessive thinking. Do I want to get rid of? Where's the desire in this? So that when I make effort in even looking at the body or observing the mind, the effort is from non-desire. So then you have the balancing ideas of if I'm in a cycle of obsessive thinking and I'm trying to get rid of it, then I have to welcome it because I'm trying to get rid of it. But if I welcome it in terms of imagery and thought, sometimes I just get more caught up into it. So that's why it seems to me the body is excellent. I can welcome bodily tensions and pressures without actually indulging in it, because I can't. The body is the body. So that's why I think body awareness is very helpful, because it allows this karma, because obsessive thinking is like a karmic force coming into consciousness. It has obviously a lot of energy. And then to get rid of it doesn't work, to indulge in it doesn't work, so you get the middle way, recognize it, and then pick it up with the body, welcome it, and investigate, okay, what's it really like now? To me, that seems a good way to go. I know following thought doesn't work. Following the pictures, I suspect it's probably similar. You know, I suspect a similar kind of recreation of a reality that then reinforces the tensions. Whereas in pure perception of body, you're not reinforcing the sense of self. So that would be one thing. If the pictures that my mind is producing and that I'm interested in are reproducing a sense of me and other, or a sense of time and all of that, then that would be a sign too. So if I look at thought, then what's the problem with thought? It's the self-view in the thought. So if I'm worried, it's not just an abstract planning. It's like, what's going to happen? Why am I wrong? It's very much a sense of me involved in it. And that sense of me, you have to somehow learn how to let go of. So I've been talking about body awareness in a kind of particular way. I have this fabulous book. You know who that is? Santana. You know who that is? These are all my secrets here. Okay, so... Alright. So I've been encouraging a kind of body. So, let this body be an object of observation. Let it become feeling. So see what that is. Let it become feeling. Rather than trying to see where your knee is and how your knee hurts, let it become feeling. At first you'll feel only the superficial surface of the body, but as you sustain the observation, you'll become aware of different layers of sensation. Become accustomed in your observation to let the observed come to you. You do not go to it. Again, become accustomed in your observation to let the observed come to you. You do not go to it. This means you are completely receptive. In the beginning, the body will appear to you in fractions, but when the looking is sustained, there comes a moment when there is a fusion of all parts and you come to a global feeling of the body. You feel the object body become more and more subtle and expanded beyond the frontiers of the physical body. In this process, there is no naming. When there is no conceptualization, at a certain point, observer and observed disappear, and there is only pure perception, direct perception. Be aware how you exclude your head from body sensation. The head belongs to the body, but it is as if you work from the head. Don't make the head the center of observation. If you do, the observer remains fixed on the observed like a donkey in a stall. When there is fusion of the observer and the feeling body, you are no longer fixed in front of you, but are brought in a way behind you. The perception is then completely homogeneous. Every part of the body is transparent. I'll read that again, but to me that's a description, physical description, of the practice of emptiness, where the sense of the observer and the kind of sense, like last night I was, if anyone did, wasn't freezing to death, I was talking about the tendency to always control and be the observer and the doer and the becomer and that kind of strong sense of self. And what this is encouraging is to really counter that through this more subtle kind of practice. So last night I was talking about the levels of teachings on anatta, not self. And anatta begins in one of the ways we talk about it, Sakkaya Ditti, personality view. And that's when I believe in the storyline or the narrative. So I feel upset about something and my mind just runs with, oh, it shouldn't have happened to me, it's not fair, blah, 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 blah. So we let go of that narrative and then we see more objectively. But that's just one level. That's the Sakkaya Ditti level. And this, I think, takes you to the next level, which is the level of what we call emptiness, where by doing this, the whole sense of the doer falls away and there's pure perception. So that's more subtle, but heck, a lot more interesting. And so what I have observed in people who do body practices, it seems to me they're quite often like a donkey in a stall. I've seen people who can get their mind quite calm and still, but they're very dependent on the object. And when the object's not there, it all falls apart. And that can't be freedom. Freedom's got to be you can sit here or you can sit in the tent, right? You can be with any object. Otherwise, it's not freedom. It's just circumstance. And I think that's this kind of retreat's great. We just have to keep adapting. So do you do vipassana or do you do samatha? I do flexibility. You keep adapting. And then you see that, you know, awareness is where it's at. It's not the conditioned thing. Now, like the meditation halls we have in New Zealand and England, beautiful places. I mean, I love them. I love to go sit there. And I love the tranquility. But a lot of it is circumstance. A lot of circumstance. So this is a kind of interesting, I think it's a very interesting pondering on what effort you make and if you're using body awareness. So let me read that again. Let this body be an object of observation. Let it become feeling. At first, you'll only feel the superficial surface of the body, but as you sustain the observation, you'll become aware of different layers of sensation. So that's when I've been saying, let this become conscious, wait for it. And then you notice your legs and you notice the subtlety, don't you? Vibrations or pressures. Become accustomed in your observation to let the observed come to you, you do not go to it. This means you are completely receptive. All right, completely receptive. So that's an interesting word to bring up into your mind. Receptive rather than dominating. Domineering, receptive. In the beginning, the body will appear to you in fractions, but when the looking is sustained, there comes a moment when there is a fusion of all parts and you come to a global feeling of the body. And this would be ideas that we have as piti sukha in our descriptions of samatha practice. So he's saying, in the beginning, the body will appear to you in fractions, But when the looking is sustained, so that's samatha. You have to sustain that receptive attitude. And that's very hard to do, right? And you're dealing with hindrances and so on. So, again, in the beginning, the body will appear to you in fractions, but when looking is sustained, there comes a moment when there is a fusion of all the parts, and you come to a global feeling of the body. You feel the object body become more and more subtle and expanded beyond the frontiers of the physical body. Again, I think those are references in our tradition to the ideas around piti sukha. In this process, there is no naming. When there is no conceptualization, and that's very important, you know, the idea of not just trying to figure it out with your head, always being in thought and trying to analyze and figure out, so there's a letting go of thought. In this process, there is no naming. When there is no conceptualization, at a certain point, observer and observed disappear, and there is only pure perception, direct perception. So to me, that's a definition of emptiness, in a very pragmatic way, in a kind of doing way. Be aware how you exclude your head from body sensation. The head belongs to the body, but it is as if you work from the head. So yesterday I was emphasizing the eyes, the tension in your eyes, the kind of sense of looking for something. Yeah? The head belongs to the body, but it is as if you work from the head. Don't make the head the center of observation. If you do, the observer remains fixed on the observed like a donkey in a stall. When there is fusion of the observer and the feeling body, you are no longer fixed in front of you, but are brought in a way behind you. It's like your body is just sitting there, body awareness. The perception is then completely homogeneous. Every part of the body is transparent. So the danger with that kind of description is then you try to repeat it conceptually. You know, okay, I'm going to do that now, and then you're finished. Because the very idea that you want to achieve that is an idea, it's conceptual. So you take the suggestion of what are the active ingredients there, and the suggestion is receptivity. So with receptivity, you're not trying to create this experience he's talking about of emptiness, but you're trying to see what are the pragmatic methods and suggestions he's making. Let the body become feeling. Right? He said, just let it become feeling. You have to wait. It becomes feeling. Completely receptive. And then you have to sustain that. So that's what I've been like trying to suggest, like get to that place of balanced attention, relaxed attention, and then sustain it, which is what we mean by samatha. And then trouble is, when you read something, then you try to get this experience and then you're toast. It doesn't work because it's desire, it's concept, it's history, it's past. And because you can't get it, you struggle with the way things are and think it's very messy. Yeah? So that's always difficult if you're reading something like that. But it does give you, I think, if you think about it, it's a very pragmatic way of kind of going forward. So let's use some of that, see how it feels.